Be advised, the Digital Graveyard contains the following: adult language, bad advice, and spoilers. There will be no further warnings. Consider yourself disclaimed.
Like November 7th or 6th by the time this episode actually updates. But we are today recording the day after Halloween, November 1st. So I guess this is the closest thing we're going to do to a Halloween special. It's the Digital Graveyard. With me, as always, is my co-host.
Bobby Digital. Yeah, this is the day after Halloween. It is November 1st. And how'd your Halloween night go?
I'm Eric Graves. I forgot to say my name.
Eric Graves. Yeah.
I'm trying to switch things up and it always ends in disaster. This is a nerdy podcast. It's a discussion between me and my best friend about some of the things going on the internet, online, and in the spheres of nerddom over the last week. It's been pretty good. I've been doing Halloween stuff, Bobby. Shockingly, you know, it is the most important holiday on the long-haired weirdo calendar, so I have to celebrate it. I'm an Orthodox Halloween celebrator. It's a very serious religious holiday for me.
Would you say it's more important to you than like Labor Day?
Yeah, Labor Day. Why is like, oh hey, thanks. I don't have to go to work. I still have to go to work on Halloween, depending on what year it is. Lame, first of all. Give us Labor Day. I will gladly labor on Labor Day to have Halloween off. Make it happen, presidents. Anyway.
And this Halloween was like a weird lineup of things, because not only was it on Saturday.
Yeah.
But it was also a full moon.
It was. Wasn't it supposed to be? It was like, not only was it a full moon, it was like a harvest moon, too. Which I don't know the difference. But it was like a lot of like weird astrological things. And also, a pandemic that may or may not cause zombies. We'll see. Stay tuned. But
everyone was saying, like, if there was a year for, like, the Sanderson sisters to be real, it was this year.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, right? Has anyone checked the Blackfire candle in Salem, Massachusetts? Because that would explain so much. I did finally rewatch. I said I was going to do it on a previous episode. I finally rewatched. It's like the first time in 7 years I rewatched Hocus Pocus. Holds up.
Hocus Pocus is like just amazing. Definitely not a kids movie. Like
I disagree. I think it's an older kids movie, but I think a lot of the jokes will just go over the heads of younger kids. Because I know I watched that movie when I was like five the first time.
Well, and that's the same with me. And maybe that's a better way to phrase it. Is just like, because a lot of the movies we watched as kids were more mature.
Definitely,
like,
I don't think...
they had mature theming.
Yeah, well, I mean, or like the, it reminds me a lot of like The Haunted Mansion. Like, it's a funny movie, but there's still, you know, a zombie with his mouth stitched shut. Like, it's difficult to think of Disney making a movie like Hocus Pocus again in this day and age, you know? It's difficult to think of Disney making another Nightmare Before Christmas, honestly, which, of course, I also watched yesterday.
How couldn't you?
It's, you know, a religious demand of Halloween. You have to. You have to watch The Nightmare Before Christmas.
You also have to watch it for Christmas time.
You do. It is both holidays, and I will hear no further debate on the subject. You do not have to have one holiday assigned to this movie. It is a free country, damn it. And the spirit of Halloween and Christmas allows you to watch the same movie twice. I don't care. I don't care what anyone says. Right. I think you can watch The Year Without a Santa Claus in July, too, because it's all about summer, right? Anyway.
Dude, I do not remember A Year Without a Santa Claus at all.
It's the one with the Heat Miser and Snow Miser, man. And that amazingly catchy song about these two dudes who hate each other. That's all anyway. That's the whole movie. Is that one song that is performed.
Because screw the rest of this movie.
There's a rest of the movie? I don't know. Anyway. It's a Halloween episode. Being that we are very new to podcasting, we don't know exactly what that's going to entail. We talked about it a little bit before we opened the microphone up. There's a few news things to talk about, but not a ton. So I think we're going to mostly spend the hour just kind of talking about some great Halloween-themed shows and movies and things, right? Like,
yeah, for sure, yeah. Because you love your horror movies, so of course we're going to talk a lot about those.
Yeah.
And I lean more towards the family-friendly stuff, but there are a couple things that I do specifically want to talk about. Like, I did watch the Charlie Brown. It's
the
Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
Oh,
last
great.
Night.
Yeah. You have to watch that. It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. Otherwise, the Great Pumpkin will rise from the pumpkin patch and eat your family. That's how the legend goes, right? It's been a while since I've seen the movie.
That's the exact legend.
Yeah, thank you. Well, not this year.
but this is the first year it wasn't on TV. It wasn't on cable.
The first year it wasn't broadcast. That's, you know, I don't have cable. That sounds wrong to me, though.
It does. Yeah, it's so totally wrong to me. And like, and the reason for it is because I think it's Apple TV Plus is what it's called.
Oh.
They got the rights to all Charlie Brown.
Oh my gosh. This is the darkest timeline. My God. Like, I mean, that makes so much sense. Of course, all of these streaming services are buying the rights to these shows and these titles. Of course this was going to happen at some time. That is a weird, unexpected ramification of this future of television that we're currently living in right now that I never saw coming. But now that you explain it, that makes perfect sense. And I hate it, but I get it. Yeah. Ugh, if I had a nickel for every time I said that on this show, God.
They did come out and say, like, you don't need to be subscribed to our service to watch these holiday specials during their months.
Awesome. So they're going to
is nice.
Yeah, like what HBO Plus does every now and then, where they'll make a couple of their shows free to watch. I feel like there'd be a lot more I'd be hearing a lot more backlash about it if that wasn't the case.
Yeah, well, and luckily for me, I just have them all on DVD. Thanksgiving, that one.
There you go. It's that. What's that guy touching his forehead meme? You can't refuse to watch Charlie Brown Christmas specials if you own them on DVD. That's not as clever as I sounded in my head. Anyway,
you were really trying for that one, man.
Yeah, that was a bad joke. Anyway,
but no, like that's an example of a movie that I have to watch every year, even though it, let's be honest, not the greatest Halloween like special or movie at all.
Well,
but. I feel like I need to watch it because I always have.
The story has almost no conflict. Like, most of the Charlie Brown specials are very anticlimactic when you think about it. But it's something about childhood, you know? Like, oh, your friend, you're hanging out with your friend who believes in this thing that's just to make him feel better all Halloween. And just, I mean, I got a rock. Come on, man. There's nothing. It's the funniest. That's the funniest thing in the world, dude. To me, yeah, and it has been since I watched it first when I was probably 3 years old, and it still is like, I got caramel, I got taffy, I got a rock.
That is just like the perfect like summarization of Charlie Brown's character.
Totally.
Just like, every other kid succeeds, they get what they want, and I got a rock.
And he's wearing a ruined ghost costume the whole time too. Which I always thought was so funny as well. He cuts too many eyes in his ghost costume.
That's gotta be my costume next year. You know what? I'm putting it down now. Next Halloween, that's gonna be my costume.
There's only 364 days till next Halloween. It's from
And I am prepared, and I will procrastinate till the last minute.
Oh, yeah. All the labor that goes into making a ghost costume with too many eye holes. it's going to be a nail biter when it comes time. All the craft stores are closed. What are you going to do? Anyway, that's funny. So, yeah, Charlie Brown Christmas special. I'm glad we mentioned that one first, too, because that really is the Christmas special. And that's a shame about
the Halloween special.
Did I keep saying Christmas special? I don't know why. Man, it's because it's November 1st that we're recording this on, and my brain has already switched to Christmas. It's the curse. That's what happens. We're already in Christmas season. Ah, I hate it.
Man, yeah. No, like, yeah, that is like the Halloween special. The one that like every family's at least watched.
If the Simpsons have done a Halloween parody of it, then it's so ingrained into the zeitgeist of culture that it's been parodied, you know? And how many other shows have parodied Charlie Brown Halloween special, The Great Pumpkin? You know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, you got to think, the thing's been around for, 60 years, give or take?
Yeah, for sure. It really is. It's like, and I was thinking about this the other day because I was watching I was watching a lot of animated Halloween movies, too, not just horror movies. Actually, I watched probably less horror movies this Halloween than I've ever watched. I really was in a family-friendly, air quotes, family-friendly Halloween mood. I was watching The Night Before Christmas, of course, and I was just kind of realizing, is like, that movie came out in 1993, right? So almost 30 years old that movie is. And before that, when you had everybody's got Christmas carols, right? Like they're really the only like Halloween song was the Monster Mash. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, I was gonna say the Monster Mash, yeah.
Yeah, and like name another one. Like there were like I remember having like a Halloween music cassette when I was a kid that had the Monster Mash first, and then Warren Zevon's Werewolf of London. The Purple People Eater song, and then like in the Hall of the Mountain King, they go dun 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 dun, dun and the Addams Family theme song, and that was like it. That was all that was on that album. There really were no Halloween carols until The Nightmare Before Christmas, and you don't think about that. You know what I mean? Like in 30 years, like well, 30 years. I mean, when Nightmare Before Christmas is as old as Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown, that's going to be like, and the songs have all become public domain after Danny Elfman's died. Oh, rest in peace. I would never wish that upon Danny Elfman, but
no, he's a treasure. Yeah,
yeah,
I
delightful.
Actually watched The Nightmare Before Christmas perform live.
Oh, really? How good was that?
It was actually really good, and it's weird. It's my first time actually seeing Danny Elfman sing.
Yeah, he's a
and
weird
I'm like,
guy.
You look at him and you do not expect that voice
yeah,
to come out of him.
He does look kind of like a less in shape. Elton John. You know what I mean?
I'd say a little more in shape.
Well, probably today nowadays.
Yeah, probably today. But yeah, like I wouldn't imagine that voice coming out of him. First of all, And then it was kind of funny because I didn't know Pee Wee Herman was the voice of Beryl.
I told a friend of mine that, and they had never heard of that either. He wasn't the voice of Beryl. He was the voice of Locke. Danny Elfman was the voice of Beryl. And then Catherine O'Hara was the voice of Shock and also Sally. Not too many people know that. That's why Locke has just a few more lines in the movie than the other two.
Yeah, because the other two already have.
Yeah, that's his only part. But yeah, I rewatching that too, because everybody knows Paul Rubens is for Pee Wee Herman and masturbating in a porno theater and not much else. But like that really is a completely different voice than he's ever done for any other thing that he does. And he really does a good job for that character, you know. And
I'm not surprised they pulled him into that movie, considering it is a Tim Burton production.
Yeah,
and
of course. Tim Burton loves working with the same people.
Well, and Tim Burton did Pee-wee's Big Adventure, right?
Yeah, it was one of his first movies that he ever got successful. And it started the show, too, I think. Because the movie, I think, came out before the show.
I don't think so.
You got a computer. You can look it up.
I'm not entirely sure.
Pee-wee's Playhouse has such a weird, storied history. You know that the set director for Pee-wee's Playhouse directed the video for Tonight Tonight by the Smashing Pumpkins and won a Grammy for it?
Wow, really?
Yeah, I watched a documentary about this. His name's like Walter, not Walter White, because that was the dude from Breaking Bad, but it's two W's. It's like Wayne White or something. Anyway, we got a little bit sidetracked there. But, you know, so I had a thought I was trying to make, like, and that was
okay.
About...
I did pull it up, yeah. Big Adventure was before Pee-wee's Playhouse, so...
Yeah, and then they gave him a show. And the show, that's why the show is so different from the movie.
I kind of assumed it was more of just like, well, we got the budget now.
I get that, too. I mean, I'm sure it's not the episode that we could do solely dedicated to Pee-wee's Playhouse is coming soon.
I didn't watch it as a kid. I know I remember watching clips or like maybe an episode here and there, but I didn't grow up with Pee-wee's Playhouse.
It was off the air before we really became sentient. It did not last that long, you know.
Well, it lasted 5 seasons.
It did
was
it really?
86 to so 86 to 91.
There you go. I was born in 91.
Exactly, same.
So I definitely remember watching reruns, but not in any kind of, like, syndicated capacity. But I did have, like, a lot of the VHSs of it. So I am familiar with Pee-wee's, quite a bit of Pee-wee's Playhouse lore. Anyway, I was trying to make a point about how, because you were talking about It's a Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, and how that's just such quintessential. It is the quintessential Halloween special. And I brought up The Nightmare Before Christmas and how I think that in time that, arguably that already is a quintessential Halloween classic. Because if you look before or around the same time as the Charlie Brown holiday specials, that each, because they have one for every holiday. The alternative side of that, I think the other, like, holiday children's specials were often made by Bass and Rankin, you know, Rankin Bass, who did the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and A Year Without a Santa Claus and all those stop-motion animated specials that the Tim Burton emulated when he produced The Nightmare Before Christmas. That's the look that he's going for. And rewatching it, I realize it more than ever that's clearly, like, such a perfect representation of those old Rankin Bass specials. I think Rankin Bass had maybe two Halloween specials, but they never got as big as Rudolph or any other Christmas programs.
Yeah, I don't even know the names of them. Yeah,
but... I know one was Mad Monster Party, and I think maybe they had one that was just Monster Mash about the song. But I don't know.
I mean, and that's how a lot of their movies were. They were just like, let's take a famous Christmas song and just make a movie of it.
Yeah, Year Without Santa Claus.
So Rudolph and Frosty, that's how we ended up with those.
Year Without Santa Claus was also a song, too.
I don't know it.
Maybe it was just a song they made. There'll be no year without a Santa Claus. I don't know. maybe that was the song they just made for the movie, and I'm just getting around. Oh, The Little Drummer Boy, they made that one, too. I remember that one.
Yep.
So the point being is, like, I think the reason why The Great Pumpkin is held in such high regard is because that is unapologetically this is a movie about Halloween, you know, and really kind of the first high profile one. And later on, I think we're just as the years, it's at a much slower rate than Christmas specials. Obviously, there's millions. There will be compounding increasingly amounts of Christmas specials every year, I guarantee it. But we're slowly kind of getting a trickle of Halloween specials every now a couple more.
Well, you could kind of argue that, like, the reason there aren't a lot of Halloween specials is because, like, monster movies and horror movies, like, fill that niche already.
Yeah, and it's difficult to walk that balance, I think, of is this family friendly or is this weird and creepy, you know? And a lot of people, I guess children's entertainment produce content creators, I don't know the name of whoever gets to decide what holiday specials get animated. I guess it might just be easier to say, oh, everybody likes Christmas, so I guess we'll just make a Christmas special this year, rather than trying to do a Halloween special. But
most TV shows and everything do both.
They
like,
do,
those are the big holidays to do.
Every sitcom does a Halloween special and a Christmas special, like, every season, regardless. Like, The Simpsons. We brought up The Simpsons, you know, the Treehouse of Horrors.
Well, Community. Let's just talk about Community.
Community, The Office. I was going to say Bob's Burgers has had a Halloween special every single season. But we can move on if you want to talk about a couple of our favorite Halloween specials from television. Sure. You brought up Community. They have some great ones.
Yeah, the one I think about specifically is the tainted meat.
The zombie one. Yeah, what does he think? He thinks it's like ground beef, right?
Like that. And so they put it in, like, the tacos or something.
Yeah, it's like, he says he's like the one with the secret flavor, the top secret flavor, the one with the special name, X Data Niner Edge. And then he, like, activates a military launch code or something. I love it. Community is such a good show. The one I think of is the one where Britta thinks one of them is a serial killer.
Yeah.
And they all tell their Christmas specials. or not, I keep saying Christmas specials. They all tell their spooky stories. I have a problem, man. What is wrong with me? But and they act out a scene sort of in the way that you can tell the way each individual will tell it. Like Troy's is like, no, sewn together to Abed forever. It's like,
yeah.
you gave us like,
Troy and Abed sewn together.
You sewed my butt to my chest, but you ended up giving me boobs. It's like, that I can touch whenever I want. With what? Feet hands! Nah!
Man, that show.
Or Abed's one is even better. He's like, it's not believable. It's like, why would they turn the radio on at the exact moment they're giving a warning about a serial killer? There would be some kind of song or other content that they would be listening to before that. But we'll skip ahead to the pertinent parts. It's like, let's not make any bad mistakes. Let's stand back to back in the middle of the room holding knives. The only way to avoid being killed by a serial killer. I love it.
I mean, it's true, though. Like, that's the thing about horror movies. Okay, but, like, looking, like, legitly, like, if you were in a situation of a horror movie,
yeah,
you would not think logically.
That is true. I think the fight or flight response is often, people often overlook that. And, you know, when you, Bobby, have you ever done this? Because I love this. Some haunted houses will have gags that have cameras in them that they like take pictures or videos of the people who pass by them, and it's always like a jump scare thing, and it is some of the funniest thing. I mean, I know it's kind of mean, but it's all in good fun. It's some of the funniest stuff ever, seeing people react to jump scares. There was this special I watched on haunted houses across the country one year, and there was this, it was just a mirror that was just in a hallway. And you have to walk very close to the mirror to get through the hallway, right? And then the mirror just drops down and somebody in a mask jumps out and boos. But there's a camera in the mirror that videotapes people before that happens. And people get really, really weird when they're in a haunted house before the scare. Like, people will, like, make faces in the mirror. People will, like, they know that something's going to jump out at them. So they get really goofy and weird about it. You know, they act really hilariously, irrationally when they're in a situation where there's lots of fright around them. And so I think we got to cut horror movie characters a little bit of slack. You know, people get weird when they're scared.
I was watching this. I don't remember the name of the YouTube channel, but essentially they were like, here's how you could escape every Saw trap.
Sure.
And literally his response to all of them were like, you've got to remain calm. And I'm like, I'm sorry, no.
Like, I have 13 seconds to gouge a key out of my eye. I'm not going to remain calm. No, thank you.
Right. If I got a bear trap wrapped around my mouth, I'm not going to remain calm.
If I got to dig through a pit of heroin needles, I'm probably going to be a lot calmer than I'd like to be at the time. Anyway, horror movies are horror. Me and my roommate were watching. We watched Hobo with a Shotgun and the first two Hellraiser movies last night, and we were kind of razzing on them because the Hellraiser movies are great. The first two ones are great. They do get really bad afterwards, but they came, I think it was 1987 and 1989 respectively, and they are very much 80s horror movies, and we were making fun of like all the tropes and goofy weird acting choices and things like that. But at the same time, it's like, dude, okay, hey, there's a skinless guy in your attic, you're not gonna be acting normal. Like,
no.
it was interesting because if you watch, I don't know, Bobby, you've probably never seen Hellraiser, right?
I've definitely seen the first Hellraiser.
Yeah, it's super, super gory. For those who haven't seen Hellraiser, is Pinhead is the primary antagonist of the Hellraiser series. He's not in the first movie that much, though. He doesn't really show up until halfway through the movie. The movie is about this box that transports people to this weird world of, like, sadomasochistic sexual, like, torture. And this guy uses the box and disappears, and then his house goes up for sale. So his brother buys the house with his new wife and his daughter, who's not his wife's, is his second wife. The second wife was in love with the brother, and then the brother gets summoned back by blood, and she needs to lure people so that he can drain of blood so that he can get his body back. That's the the most of the movie Hellraiser. I noticed this. If you take out all of the parts of Hellraiser without the blood-draining demon, it's kind of like a family comedy. Like, from the dad's perspective, he never sees anything coming. Like, and it's kind of like, oh, well, why would you go into that room and get killed with a hammer? It's like, okay, well, from his perspective, nothing's going on. Like, it's just him, right, him moving into a new house. Oh, and my daughter just got a job. Let's celebrate. Let's have a party. Which is weird to think about too. That's another thing. Like, we, the audience, have privileged information in that we know that things are not normal in this movie. The people in the movie don't realize that things aren't normal until it's suddenly not anymore. You know what I mean? Like, Get Out is a perfectly normal movie until suddenly your girlfriend's a serial killer and they're brainwashing you, you know? Like, Candyman's a perfectly normal movie until suddenly a guy with a hook for a hand vomits out a bunch of bees. Like, Saw is a perfectly normal movie until you wake up with a bear trap around your head. It's... every horror movie has one thing in common. They're normal until they're not.
I kind of want to talk about, because you mentioned a little bit ago that, like, the Hellraiser movies, like, the first two are good, and then they go off the rails.
But a lot of horror movie franchises are the same way. But, yeah, we'll go elaborate, please.
That's kind of what I wanted to talk about. It's just, like, a lot of these horror movies are set up with, like, an initial premise, which is good.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are, like, it is good for really just one solid movie, maybe two.
Yeah.
But afterwards, they're like, well, we have to keep the franchise going because it got popular.
And you know what? That is so... The reason why there's, like, 12 Nightmare on Elm Street movies and a million Friday the 13ths is for that exact reason. They have to keep the rights. And sometimes it doesn't end with bad movies. Sometimes it ends with perfectly watchable movies. But after the first couple, they get pretty ridiculous. Freddy Krueger killed a guy with a pizza one time. Like, it's insanity, you know?
And Freddy Krueger specifically. So, like, they really dialed back, like, his backstory.
Yeah,
Being a child molester.
Like. Yeah, I'd say the second one's pretty scary, too, although the story's not that good. But the first Nightmare on Elm Street is, like, a masterpiece of horror. It is a terrifying film. And then as the story progresses, when Freddy kind of becomes, like, the protagonist in the zeitgeist, we start to like Freddy Krueger. Like, he becomes the icon of the movie. The movie's about him. And it becomes almost like this weird, like, oh, how is he going to do it this time? And the Saw movies, to a lesser extent, but still the same tone. Like, the protagonist becomes Jigsaw. The first Saw movie is amazing because Jigsaw's not in it at all until the end. It's terrifying.
Yeah. It's not till 2 that, like, we really learn his name and what's going on about him.
2, when I stopped watching, man, just because I just didn't like him at all. But, it's like the Saw movies, we all went to the Saw movies for the same reason, to see this torture porn shit. And the story became secondary. Like Nightmare on Elm Street, like, we went to go see Freddy do some crazy and crack some jokes and make some crazy weird dream nightmares happen. And then the stories kind of came second to that. And Hellraiser was a perfect example of that, too. Like, after the third or fourth movie, they got insane. I think the fourth movie is in space.
Freddy? Or Nightmare on Elm Street?
Hellraiser. But they did do that for Jason Voorhees in Jason X.
Yeah, Jason X. Too.
And I don't know. I don't think Freddy was ever in space. I don't think they ever jumped that particular shark. They did do a lot of ridiculous kills, man. I just, like, he kills a guy in a video game one time.
And he uses the line, now this is playing with power.
God damn, yeah. They got ridiculous, dude. But horror, I think... To a degree, any franchise that goes to 8 movies is going to do that regardless.
Well, you mentioned the going to the future. It's like, yeah, Jason X did that. Hellraiser did that. And I believe the Halloween movies did. Halloween H2O?
Yeah, you're right. I don't remember if that one was in the future or not, but I do know that that one is technically non-canonical because Jodie Foster's character gets killed in it, and then they revamped it a few years ago with Jodie Foster again. So they have revamped the Halloween movies recently, so they ruined all that canon. And also the Rob Zombie Halloweens are not canonical to the original ones either.
Apparently, oh God, because who made the original Halloweens?
John Carpenter.
John Carpenter. Apparently he hates the Rob Zombie movies.
Well, they're entirely, those are Rob Zombie movies. Those are not Halloween movies, man. Like it's just Rob Zombie making a Rob Zombie movie with a beloved horror classic character, you know? Like that the Halloween is, I was talking to my roommate a little bit about this while we were watching Hellraiser 2. The difference between Hellraiser and a lot of previous slasher films before that really makes it stand out is gore is not used excessively in a lot of horror movies up until that point because of decency standards, you know, in the rating systems and things. Getting an X rating at that time is still terrible because that just means that your movie cannot be shown in theaters. And
right.
And at the time, the film advisory board was pretty loosey-goosey with handing out X ratings. So a lot of horror movies really had to edit stuff down, or even like Jaws or Jurassic Park, you know, had to have a lot of their deaths off screen. And the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, surprisingly, one of the least bloody horror movies you'll ever see. Because all the deaths are done off camera. Hellraiser was really one of the first horror movies that was like, here's a guy without skin. Here's a guy who has needles going through his head. They're not going to do anything particularly terrifying right now. They're just going to stay on screen and talk to you, and you have to look at them. It really changed the way horror movies think about gore. And I realized that watching them the other day. But like a lot of films, like Halloween, to get back to the point, Halloween is not a very bloody, disgusting movie at all. It's a suspenseful movie. Michael Myers is not a particularly terrifying individual. He just stands off in the distance and is really, really creepy. And then you see him walking slowly through your house and while Jodie Foster's hiding in a closet and stuff like that. Like, the death scenes in the first Halloween movie really are not that grotesque at all.
No, yeah.
So when you compare John Carpenter's original vision to Halloween to Rob Zombie's Halloween, which is just killing, like here's a bunch of dead animals that Michael Myers has made mini crucifixes out of. Like, it's an entirely different movie. It's a Rob Zombie movie. It is not a Halloween movie. That's all. That's what I'll say about that. Although
right.
I will say,
but you like Rob Zombie movies for the most part.
I have never not liked a Rob Zombie movie. I'll admit it. I know a lot of them are bad. I still like them. I love them, dude. I just watched, this was a little while ago, but I watched Three from Hell, which is his long-awaited sequel to The Devil's Rejects, and didn't get great reviews, but I thought it was good. I thought it was fine. I liked
Three from Hell.
Oh, did you? Did you saw that one? So you seen The Devil's Rejects, too?
Yeah. I've seen them all.
You know what I liked better? Yeah, I made you watch House of a Thousand Corpses. Remember that.
House of a Thousand Corpses is my least favorite of the three.
See, I think that's the common stance. I'm the opposite. House of a Thousand Corpses is my most favorite one because that, I think, is the last true 80s slasher film. Okay. Whereas The Devil's Rejects is, this is new horror. This is what horror movies will be from now on. And it really has. Like, this is the excessive gore, the really, like, the dirty camera lens flares, you know what I mean? Like, this just really dirty, bloody horror films about really unlikable people who you kind of have to root for because they're the protagonists. But
House of a Thousand Corpses to me is kind of like, so it feels like a roller coaster ride where it's like it starts off like not so bad, and then like you get up real high and then you dip and it's like scary for a minute and then it slows for a second and then just gets a little worse, like not worse like bad, worse like
grotesque,
more shit just keeps happening.
Yeah. Like, no, I absolutely agree with that. I would say the reason I compare it to 80s slasher films is because that movie is ridiculous. That movie is insane. It's like, oh, it's a family of serial killers. Where have I heard that before? Well, that's Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Oh, wait, they're turning people into sideshow freaks? What the hell? Like, that's crazy. Oh, what, they have a shed full of dead cheerleaders just lying around? Oh, what? Now suddenly there are zombies underneath the house and a crazy surgeon who's, lobotomizing people? Like, that movie just gets insane and insane and insane. And that is in my opinion, in keeping with the 80s slasher movie vibe, whereas The Devil's Rejects changed that. And it was just, now we're just going to follow this family of serial killers, almost like there are some movies. It was like Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. There was Maniac. There were Psycho. Devil's Rejects is a little more like Psycho. It's more about how crazy these people are and just the aftermath of watching in their wake. It's as crazy as that sounds, because Psycho is not a particularly gruesome movie either. No. I think,
but I love Psycho.
It's one of the greatest. It's rightfully one of the greatest horror movies of all time. To my point, Three from Hell, I liked a little bit more than The Devil's Rejects, just because Rob Zombie, especially when he started out his career in film, exactly what you described. He does is it gets more and more and more, and he makes a lot of really good scenes and really, really impactful camera shots and lines and writing and stuff. He never really figured out how to end one of his movies until recently in his career. I think Three from Hell has such a better ending than Devil's Rejects. Like, Devil's Rejects ending isn't bad compared to, like, his Halloween movies. Those endings are terrible. Like, getting shot down in a blaze of glory while driving into a police barricade, that's a good ending. But having...
Rob shouldn't have had a third movie because they should have all died, but...
I think that's why it took him so long. But the Three from Hell ends with the Firefly family walking away from a guy they just lit on fire. And so much... If you're going to make a movie about these guys, these serial killers, like, I love that. I love that so much. I loved the ending of Three from Hell. The other problem that I had with Devil's Rejects is the first half of that movie is just like House of a Thousand Corpses. It's just these guys killing, killing, killing in ridiculously horrific ways. They're bad dudes. And then suddenly that sheriff kidnaps them and tortures them, and suddenly they become, like, the victims. And I really found that change in the story jarring. Three from Hell doesn't have that problem, where the characters are in jail and they're kind of victimized, but they're still bad guys in the beginning of the movie. And then they get out and they're just bad guys, bad guys, bad guys. And then they flee to Mexico, they're not on the run. They don't have to kill people all the time. And you get to kind of like them a little bit more. You get to grow to like them a little bit. But then this insane climactic shootout with a bunch of masked wrestlers happens. And that, to me, is, I think, that's a Rob Zombie ending to me. Just this insanity, you know? So I liked that pacing of the tone a little bit more in Three from Hell. But Devil's Rejects is still, like, probably Rob Zombie's best movie. I won't say it's not. That's just my personal critique of it. We got on a weird Rob Zombie tangent there. We were talking about slasher movies.
Well, he's contributed a lot to the horror genre.
Yeah, like, not just in movies, but in soundtracks, too.
That's the thing. Like, his soundtracks were in a ton of horror movies at the time.
Who would have thought a guy who legally had his last name changed to Zombie was so such a big fan of Halloween? It's weird.
It's weird, man. Yeah, never would have put the two and two together.
Yeah, Rob, I never saw it coming. Anyway, we spent a good time talking about slasher films. I'm sure I could go on, but I wanted to talk a little bit more about we were going to talk about sitcoms. We only talked about Community. What about the Office Halloween episode? Remember that one?
Oh, which one? Like,
there were a couple. Because isn't it like the running gag is that Jim always does really lazy Halloween costumes or something?
Well, it's that he never wants to dress up, but everyone expects him to. So he'll do something quick, like tape a circle to his shirt and be like, "I'm a three-hole punch."
He's three-hole punch Jim, yeah. or draw a book on his face.
Yeah.
And then that one time he dressed up as Popeye. That was the one.
That was cute when, Pam was olive oil, he was Popeye, and their baby was the baby.
It sucks so much if you dressed up as olive oil and your husband didn't want to dress up as Popeye and you were just olive oil. Because first of all, that costume could be like any cartoon character from the 30s. Like, you know, but without Popeye there, that is super funny. And there was never any, like, particularly scary Office Halloween specials.
That's not what the show is about. The show is about normal people.
That one,
so, like,
I gotta say,
if they had, like, an actual scary episode, it would go against brand.
My least favorite season of The Office might have my favorite Halloween episode of The Office, and that is the one with Robert California, where he's, where he just spends the whole party just like learning what scares people and then tells a story that has everything that's scary to people and then says like, and then ends the story in the most possibly anticlimactic way. And then is just like, it's like, don't be afraid of stuff. Like we waste so much time being afraid of things. Like just for one night a year, we get to enjoy being scared. And that was to me like Robert California is a character that I'm too often hard on him. There were other problems with The Office after Steve Carell left. And I think I often blame Robert California for that, but because he became such an unnatural like focus from the rest of what the show was, which, like you said, was about normal people. But if I had to pick one like line of his, well, he has some really funny lines. I'll admit that. I'll be the first to admit that. But I love that Halloween speech that he gives, not because it's funny, but because it's a really like that is the meaning of Halloween. It's the year where we get it's scary. We get to enjoy that, though, where we have fundamentally changed the value of fear in our minds. Fear is a good thing today. And we become part of it. We become part of the spooky season. And it was beautiful. And I love that. And so, yeah, like The Office, yeah, never had a scary Halloween special, but they had some really good Halloween specials. I will say that.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I think their Christmas specials probably hold up the best, but yes, their Halloween specials have always been very good.
Because their Christmas episodes are so funny. They're so funny.
Their Christmas episodes are great. I actually just got done watching the dinner party episode.
Oh, the worst. Oh, my God. Where the dinner party like, where it's just Michael and Jan and Pam and Jim, right? And then Dwight crashes it.
Yeah, and Andy and Angela are there, but they don't contribute much to the episode. But but the whole thing is just this tear down of like Michael as a person, essentially.
It is. I think the opus of that episode is this is so not a Halloween episode, but it is. You're probably right. That is probably the scariest episode of The Office, I would think. Because that is a real life office nightmare. Getting invited to a party at your boss's house, and realizing that your boss's life is terrible. His private life is awful. Like, I can't imagine something more chilling in my everyday life than that, dude.
In that a normal person's life, yeah.
That would be a nightmare, dude. It's like, how do I get out of this? It's a different kind of fear entirely. Oh, wow.
Oh, God. Did you ever hear the whole... So, the Scranton Strangler.
Yeah.
In The Office.
Yeah.
For those of you that don't know, there's a big running, like, joke around in The Office about, like, there's a Scranton Strangler, a guy who comes around, tries to strangle people, and does not kill them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The joke is that he strangles them until they, like, come close to passing out.
And then he
can't finish them.
I never knew that. I always thought it was just like a serial killer that was in Scranton, Pennsylvania is where The Office takes place, if you're not familiar with the show. I always thought it was like an actual like murderer. But so the Scranton Strangler never actually kills anybody?
No. So the big running thing was like, oh, it's Toby because he can't commit to anything.
Oh, wow.
So he starts killing a person and then just gives up because he can't bring himself to do it.
It was funny because, like, later in the show, Toby ends up being on the jury for the Scranton Strangler, I remember. And then he believes, like, there's for, like, a whole two seasons, he believes he has exonerating evidence and that the guy who's in jail is, like, innocent. And then he goes to talk to him, and then he strangles him.
Yeah.
the dude strangles Toby while he's trying to prove that he's innocent. I thought that was the perfect culmination of that story arc was that, no, Toby was wrong. Toby was absolutely right to put the man in jail. It was great.
Right. But that still has people thinking like, okay, maybe Toby told him, I'm the Scranton Strangler.
Oh, yeah, and that's why the dude tried to strangle Toby?
Yeah, because he's serving his sentence.
I love it. Oh, and that's the perfect alibi, getting strangled by the guy you put in jail.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow, we solved it. We cracked it. Right here on the Digital Graveyard. You heard it, listening audience. Toby Flenderson, Scranton Strangler, confirmed.
Oh, man. I really hope that is the case, though.
I hope they make a movie, and I hope they reveal that, yeah. That's why Dwight had to fire him, because Dwight found out about it. So Dwight fired Toby in the last episode. That's why.
That's why.
It's all coming together.
It's not because Toby's kind of a buzzkill.
Weird that Nelly had to leave the country, right? It's not like Toby was taking an unhealthy obsession with her or anything.
Right.
Not unlike a Scranton strangler. I don't know. Anyway, we solved it, Bobby.
These aren't even Halloween episodes, man.
We haven't talked about an Halloween episode in a while. Yeah, I don't know. Is there any other show that you kind of want to talk about? Or we can get right into Treehouse of Horrors.
I mean, I kind of want to just bring up Gargoyles.
Sure.
Because for those of you that don't know, I am a Gargoyles super fan.
Yeah.
I love that show. I've rewatched it many times over.
It's on Disney Plus, and it's great.
I have so many like action figures and stuff hung up around my basement here.
Yeah.
They only have one Halloween special, but the entire show is like...
It's kind of a Halloween special.
Yeah, the entire show is. But their Halloween special is kind of nice because it's around that point that I'm not a fan of, where Goliath and Eliza are starting to kind of have a romantic relationship.
Yeah.
And they're kind of like, well, this is the one time a year you guys can walk around.
Yeah. Because they're gargoyles.
Right. They're monsters.
No, yeah, I remember that one.
But the entire, like, it's Halloween night. The whole thing is kind of portrayed as this whole Beauty and the Beast thing going on.
Yeah. Because
she dresses as Belle.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember it.
And, yeah, they just have a nice romantic dance. And it's just one of the sweetest episodes of that show. And I just want to talk about how great Gargoyles is, guys.
Yeah, well, like, sure. Well, it goes back to what I was saying before. Halloween, the true meaning of this season is when we can allow ourselves to accept scary things, to accept fear, you know? When in doing so, we kind of learn that what scary things deserve our fear during the rest of time and what scary things don't. And I think a very recurring theme, especially in animation of Halloween specials, is things like that. Like the gargoyles, the whole show of the gargoyles is that they're the good guys. And all their lives, humans fear them. They're scary because they're big, scary monsters. On Halloween, they're just normal, and they just get to hang out. Ninja Turtles did the same thing so many times, you know?
I think every iteration of Ninja Turtles has had that episode.
Has had that same joke where the Ninja Turtles, hey, nice costume, dude. Hey, you too. You know? That's a recurring theme. I think that's the meaning of the season. It's when we allow ourselves to have fun being scared, we realize that some of the things that we're scared of don't really deserve that much fear. And I think that's exactly the point of the Gargoyles. Well, all of Gargoyles, but specifically that episode that you're describing. So, yeah it's and you're not wrong. Gargoyles is an amazing show that everybody should rewatch if you have Disney Plus. Like, it's so good. And I'm sure the writers intended exactly what I've just described for that episode, you know? Yeah, but that's great.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Disney to, because Jordan Peele has been saying for years he wants to do Gargoyles, and I'm like, let him.
Jordan Peele's great, dude. I just found out. So he's redoing Candyman, which is a movie I already brought up, which is a great, especially because the relationship with African Americans in horror movies. Most horror movies are scary for everybody, right? But there are several the running gag that the black guy's always the first to die. There are tropes that sort of make themselves in a way. And there are other horror movies that are intended for black audiences, you know, like Tales from the Hood starring Snoop Dogg.
Watched like half of that and I was just like, I bow out.
Yeah. Candyman is one of such movies because it's about an urban legend in the inner city and white people coming in to try and tear down a project to build a luxury apartment. It's literally gentrification. And it's also from the same guy who made Hellraiser. So it's also got a lot of really weirdly, uncomfortably sexual and visceral, like, gory scenes in it. It's basically this urban legend. It's basically Bloody Mary. Like, you say Candyman's name in front of a mirror three times, and he comes and kills you with his weird hook hand. Jordan Peele is remaking that, and there is a trailer out, although I don't know if there's a release date yet. It looks amazing. I also found out that he's remaking The People Under the Stairs, which isn't really a really a black focused movie, but the primary character is black. He's like a 11-year-old black child in this house with a bunch of creepy ghouls hidden under the stairs. And I'm really excited to see that too, because they're both great. I love them.
Sure.
So Jordan Peele, he clearly loves the horror genre and he's good at it. He won an Oscar for it.
Us or Get Out. Get Out.
He won for Get Out. I still haven't seen Us. Is it good? Yeah.
Yeah, that's where Reem and I had our first date.
Oh, that's nice. It's cute.
Not really, but...
I don't think going to a Jordan Peele movie... Get Out would also be a really bad movie to take a date to, you say it.
Oh, yeah, especially because, yeah.
But well, even without the racial connotations, finding out your significant other is a serial killer who's just been luring you into a trap is a horror movie trope that's scary for everybody, dude. That's a nightmare, man.
Yeah,
that's the
yeah.
Wicker Man in a nutshell, dude. The Wicker Man's so good. The original.
There's a lot of things about Us that I do not understand still.
Yeah, I still haven't seen it, but it looks weird.
It tries to be so cerebral. And make you think.
Okay. Yeah, that kind of horror is not for everybody. Some people just want to watch, you know, something scary, and some people just want to watch Freddy Krueger cracking wise and killing teenagers, you know? It's like Cabin in the Woods. Like, there is a formula to horror movies, and the reason there is a formula is because it works. Like, we like seeing the dumb kids get what's coming to them, you know? And we like seeing the good kids survive till the end, or not, sometimes, you know? Yeah, horror movies are great, Bobby. I love them.
Right. This does kind of make me think of one news story that's around that we can talk about real quick, because it is kind of horror movie related.
And we are getting to the end of the show, too, so we should at least do one news story per episode.
Sure. Okay, so this one is about Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah.
The cast is getting back together to do a live stream reading of it.
Really?
And Tim Curry is like, I'm doing it, too.
Yeah, well, Tim Curry very famously had a stroke a few years ago, and his speech has been belabored, to put it kindly, since then. So that is impressive that he would want to come out of retirement to do that, you know, because speaking is a physically taxing thing for him these days, you know?
Yeah.
So good guy, Tim Curry. What's not to love about Tim Curry, dude?
And presumably, they expect him to sing, too.
Oh, my God, you're right. Rocky Horror Picture Show is a musical. He's going to have to sing.
Yeah.
Good Lord. So in what capacity is this going to be, like a live stream event or something, or a table read, or what? So what capacity is this?
It is a live table read. Actually, it happened yesterday. We just didn't watch it.
Oh, I didn't see. Oh, man.
So now you could probably find it all on YouTube. But yeah, they got all the. Okay. So as for music, performances will be provided by a variety of different people. So
he's not going to sing.
The actors weren't singing it.
They are all quite old, and their voices probably sound a lot different now.
Yeah, it said much of the major characters will be returning, but they'll also be joined by Wilmer Valderrama, Lance Bass, Rosario Dawson, Seth Green, Jason Alexander, Jason George, and Taylor Schilling.
Oh, wow.
Oh, and David Arquette.
David Arquette? Oh, my God. This is great. This is everything the Rocky Horror Picture should be. Nobody famous enough to get anybody to watch on their own, but everybody that somebody's heard of before. I'm loving it.
And that's seriously all of these extra people. Like, I've heard of them, but none of them are ticket sellers.
Oh my God, Wilmer Valderrama and Lance Bass. I love it.
Rosario Dawson, who I love. Like,
everybody loves
I
Rosario Dawson.
She's an American treasure, even though I can't say she's American.
The movie industry did her dirty, man. Like, she should be, by all accounts, she should be a much bigger star than she is. And everybody who's worked with her loves her, too. Kevin Smith loves her. Rob Zombie loves her. She's great, dude. Well, I guess
they made her the linchpin of that Defenders universe.
Oh, yeah. She was in the Defenders. She's great. Yeah, dude. She was Night Nurse, although they never called her that in the show.
Yeah, maybe they might have referenced it once, but yeah.
Yeah.
But
give her a show, Disney Plus. Do it. Make a hospital drama starring Rosario Dawson, where she has to help people who have been, I don't know, killed by the rhino or something. I don't know. There's something there.
It's just like there was another rhino attack.
Oh, God, I'll go get the iodine. I don't know what nurses. I'm woefully ill informed on what hospital etiquette is like. But no, I think that's a show there. Prove me wrong, Disney Plus.
No, but I've read many a comic book where like the plot was just about the normal people within the universe.
Yeah,
and I find that a lot more interesting sometimes.
I feel like for a streaming television service, I feel like you actually kind of want to flesh out some stuff like that. You know, I feel like there's something there. I know NBC tried to do a sitcom about like an insurance company in the superhero universe or something, and it didn't last that long. But it was like a traditional sitcom.
It was like the DC universe. So like they would mention Batman and Superman and all that. But ultimately, like, it's not like anyone ever showed up. Although I think at one point they had a dude dressed as like Booster Gold show up. Fuck Booster Gold.
Give him a show. It's gonna be terrible. I love it. I love Booster Gold. I love Booster Gold because you can't love Booster Gold. He's obnoxious. Anyway, back to Halloween because we're gonna have to wrap it up in a little bit here. We still got a little bit of time. Is there anything else we really wanted to talk about? So the Rocky Horror Picture Show we just talked about. We've gone over slasher films. We've gone over the true meaning of the season. We've gone over our favorite horror movies. You know what we did? And we talked about what we've been watching recently, although I did neglect to mention that Owl House is now on Disney Plus, so I got caught up on that, and that show's adorable.
Oh, yep, I'm three episodes in on that. I love that show.
It's adorable. I love that show to death. But the other thing I wanted to talk about, and I guess we can maybe end on this, depending on how much we have to say on this, or maybe do have time for another little tidbit. The other thing I think people have been kind of probably waiting for us to talk about, Season 2 of The Mandalorian, episode 1, is on Disney Plus. Have you watched it yet, Bobby?
No, I still haven't watched season 1.
Well, it is a spoiler show, so how much do you want me to go forward with describing it? It's not. I promise I won't ruin anything because every episode of The Mandalorian is pretty much just based on some kind of samurai or western movie to begin with.
Is The Mandalorian a woman?
No. It's nothing like. You still don't get to see. But Bobby, you see his face at the end of season 1.
Oh, well, see, I didn't watch it. You just spoiled it for me.
You haven't watched season 1 yet? Oh, my God. Okay. No, episode 1 of season 2, I wanted to bring it up just because it's the triumph of The Mandalorian is that it's not that much about Jedi or the Force, that it's about the rest of this galaxy far, far away. And there was a lot of expanded universe Star Wars stuff back in the day, man. As a kid, did you ever read those? You weren't a big Star Wars guy, so I understand if you didn't. But they had, like, books that would explain how their ships work, that they would be, like, cross-sections of their spaceships, you know? They had books that were, like, bestiaries of different animals that you don't actually get to see in the movie. These are some other animals on the ecosystem of Tatooine. And the reason I think this is significant is because the first episode of season 2 deals with one such animal that I specifically remember from one of the Star Wars bestiaries. It looks completely different than it did in the drawings of it, but it's called like a crater dragon, and you never see one in the original Star Wars movies, but you see a skeleton of one when C-3PO and R2-D2 are walking down some sand dunes on Tatooine. It's basically just a giant sandworm with this acid-spitting lizard head. And the first episode of season 2 is the Mandalorian is hired to kill one. And it's basically like the worms from Dune, except a dragon that breathes acid. And Timothy Oliphant and the Mandalorian need to team up to stop it. And it's great, dude. So I wanted to bring that up. It's okay if you haven't watched it yet, Bobby. I know you'll get there eventually. The Mandalorian is so good, dude. You got to check it out. I know it's that Halloween theme.
I know, but it is that whole, like, I don't love Star Wars to begin with.
But
there's other things I'm watching, and I know everyone's going to be like, but it's different than regular Star Wars.
It is, and Bobby, you liked Rogue One, which is the only other than the Ewoks movies, the only other non-Jedi-centered Star Wars title. And The Mandalorian is that, and I feel like I don't want to say that the Jedi are the problem with Star Wars, because no, the whole movies are about them. But we can definitely stand to see more than just them in Star Wars movies. And The Mandalorian, it's surprisingly refreshing. And I feel like if you watched The Mandalorian, you might feel that same way. But I mean, you got to decide for yourself. I'm not going to beat the point home, because we do have to kind of wrap it up here pretty soon. Unless you want to say some last notes before we call this an episode.
I do just want to say one thing. This is going to be a story from my childhood real
quick. Baba Booey? No.
we got time for it?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So when I was a kid one time, my mom took me to a kid's house that I did not like this kid.
Was it me?
No. We didn't know each other as like little kids.
Yeah, don't rub it in, Bobby. Jeez.
Yeah, but I was like 8 or so. Okay. So we go to this kid's house and he's just like a jerk and was so mean.
Mm-hmm. One of those kids.
And we're just trying to play nice. We're playing like with Power Ranger toys and he is like slamming his action figure into my fingers, stuff like that.
Lame.
And eventually he like leaves the room, right?
Yeah.
The reason this becomes a Halloween related story is because I'm like, I'm just going to like turn on his TV and hopefully we can sit down and just watch TV.
Yeah.
And what is playing on in his VCR
porn
is the Winnie the Pooh Halloween special.
There was a Winnie the Pooh Halloween special?
Huh. Oh, yeah. It's great. What it is. It's Pooh Bear dresses as a honeybee.
Oh, of course, because he loves honey.
Right.
But
so,
he hates those bees, which is why it's scary to him.
So I'm watching this. Eventually, he comes back into the room, and he just does this scream that I've never heard a child scream before, and yanks the VCR from the TV, the wall, and throws it out his own window.
What?
Right. Like, because I said, like, I don't, can we take a break? Can we just watch TV for a little bit?
Wow.
And yeah, he just got so mad at that idea. And then his parents come in, because obviously they heard all that.
Throwing a VCR at the window.
Right. My mom and I are just like, we're going to go. And just in the car ride, I'm just like, I don't want to go to his house anymore, Mom.
So the Winnie the Pooh Halloween special is going to be forever linked to that memory for you?
Exactly, yeah. Every time Halloween comes around, or anytime I see, like, Winnie the Pooh, I'm like, man, I remember that day.
Well, we're going to call it there. Happy Halloween, one and all. It's great. This has been the Digital Graveyard Halloween edition. As always, thank you to Sam Dunn and John Wheeler for the use of our theme song, Eric Castellanos Art for the use of our logo. Eric Castellanos, also known as the Dapper Skull, lots of spooky art that you can buy for him on his Etsy page. I would also say give us a like, share, and subscribe on any platforms that you're currently listening on. That helps us so much. You can listen to us on Audible, Google Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. Eventually, I'm really bad about editing these episodes for YouTube, but I will get there. Eventually, it's my goal for this month. Don't hold me to that. Don't do it. That's going to be it. Bobby, anything to send us off?
Goodbye, everyone. Have a good night.
Yeah, have a great night.
Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, one and all.